Thank you.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for opening with that. That's one of my favorite things to talk about a little bit later.
Okay.
But you have portrayed the character longer than any other actor, and this is, you know, in September, I believe it's 25 years for the animated series.
I feel old.
And what you were getting into when you first took on the role.
You know, whenever people ask me about this business, I always think of the John Lennon line from the song, "Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans." I had no plans to do this at all. I was a stage actor. I trained at Juilliard. I was classically trained. I worked for Joe Papp at the Public Theater. I did a lot of Shakespeare around the country. I did Broadway, off-Broadway. And I just happened to be in L.A. I was still based in New York, and I happened to be in L.A. doing a series. And I used to do a lot of commercial voiceovers, because first thing you learn in New York in the theater is that you can't make a living in the theater. You gotta have another job. Even if you're on Broadway, you gotta have something. So a lot of the theater actors in New York do voiceovers, commercial voiceovers, because it's a very lucrative. Madison Avenue is based in New York. The ad agencies are in New York. So there's a lot of that that goes on there. So that was my intro to voice work, was through commercial voice work. So I had a commercial voiceover agent, and I was in L.A. Doing a series that was only very short-lived. And he said, you know, they're putting together a new show over Warner Brothers, Batman. I said, new show? Batman's been around forever. He said, there's never been an animated show, which I didn't even realize. So he said, I said, well, I've never done animation. He said, just go over. They're looking at, you know, stage actors. They're looking at everybody. Go over and see. So I went in just as an actor. This was a cold, cold audition. As cold as an audition can be. They gave us no material. I just went in and I walk in. Imagine this. I walk in and I'm meeting Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, Alan Burnett, and Andrea Roman.
So
Alan Burnett came later. So it was Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, and Andrea Roman. I didn't know who any of them were. So I said, hi, how you doing? I'm Kevin. And they said, well, what is your background on Batman? I said, well, I know the Adam West show from the 70s. He said, no! We love Adam West, but that's not what we're doing. That's totally different. Erase that. Think film noir. Think 30s. Think heavy drama. His parents were killed as a child. He saw them murdered in front of him. He spent his life avenging their deaths. He lives in the caves. He's got a secret identity. He's avenging. He spends their life avenging their deaths. He's made this solemn oath. And I said, you're telling the Hamlet story. And Bruce Timm said, well, no one's ever said that before. I said, well, I'm kind of looking at it from a stage perspective. He said, look, let me just use my imagination. So this is totally my first audition for an animated show. My first information about who Batman is. So I think the fact that I had no preparation, that I had no preconceptions, gave me such incredible freedom in the booth to just let my actor's imagination just run wild and just take me in my imagination to the place where I felt that pain of childhood, the darkness of seeing his parents taken away from him, the secrecy of living his life in the shadows to avenge their deaths, and I just went into this very dark, husky, brooding kind of sound. And I saw them get really still in the booth. And then I saw everyone start running around. And I thought, well, I've either done something really bad or really good. And they had hired me. And Andrea Romano told me they had seen over 500 people. They'd seen everybody. They were looking for everybody for these roles, not just for Batman, but for Bullock and Commissioner Gordon. You know, they were casting this whole show. They had seen hundreds and hundreds of people, but Batman was the one role they really wanted to nail, to build the show around, and they were having a real hard time finding me. And I think, I honestly believe, it was just the fact that I had no preconceptions, and it was just me with my training, using my imagination in that situation. That's why whenever anyone asks me, how do you get into voice business, I say, well, first you go to Juilliard. Then you go to Broadway. No, there are a million ways of getting into voice business. I did an episode of Batman the Animated Series where Ice-T came on to do a guest star. And he said, what are you doing here? I said, you're a rap star. You know, this is 25 years ago before Law and Order. And he said, oh man, you know, my kids are gonna shit when they hear my voice. So, you know, he just wanted to do it for the kicks. So there were all kinds of people on that show, and then word got out what an amazing show it was. They spent twice as much per half hour as had been previously spent on an animated show. Every cell was hand-painted. They had a full symphony score. They had casts of 10 or 12 actors. No one had spent this kind of money before. Not since probably the days of like Walt Disney. So they just upped the ante. And that's why when you see those shows now, they still look so new. They look so fresh. They're still so dramatic. They're so good because they threw money at them, and they also went outside the usual realm of actors. There are wonderful voice actors in L.A., but there are also wonderful film and stage actors that had not necessarily been used before. So we had all kinds of people come on. You know, Roddy McDowell was the Riddler. Mark Hamill was the Joker. Adrienne Barbeau was the first Catwoman, you know? I mean, all these wonderful actors came in. Richard Mull. There were all kinds of wonderful actors that came in to do the show because word got out that it was a really great show. Everyone wanted to do it. And it was just 2 hours of, like, incredible fun in a studio with other good actors. And everyone really... When you get a good group of actors together, and this is where Andrea Romano comes in, the casting director, who's so wonderful. She picks people who are generous. Actors are just like people. Actors are people. There are generous ones, there are selfish ones. There are kind ones, there are mean ones, you know? There are ones you want to work with, and there are ones you just want to kill. Andrea is great at picking people who are generous, who are kind, and who love to work together. So you get, like Mark and I, when we get in a booth together, we love working together because I know that the better he is, the better I'm going to be. And he knows the better I am, the better he's going to be. So we give to each other. There are actors you get in a booth with who just take. And it's difficult to work with someone like that. Just like people in life, there are takers and there are givers. It's hard to be around takers. It's draining. So Andrea's great at finding actors who are givers. So each week you come in, everyone who was on that show, it was just like, remember when you were little? The kids in the play, in the sandbox who were really cool to be with, who were really fun to play with, that's what it's like working with Andrea's actors. They're just generous, fun to play with actors who know that the better you are, the better they'll be. And that's the reason those shows were so good. So then it grew out of that. And that led to Batman and Robin, and that led to the Justice League, and that led to Batman Beyond, and then the Arkham games. happens while you're busy making other plans. You know, I had no idea. It just went on and on and on. 25 years later, it's a career. Who knew? You want to make God laugh? Make some plans.
Well, as much as, you know, the role was a gift to you, you were a gift to the role because you ask people and people say, he's my favorite Batman.
Isn't that wonderful? You're the reason I come to Comic-Cons, because I'm a stage actor. I love to be on stage. I love to interact with audiences. In Hollywood, you know, voice work, film work, television work, you don't get to do that. You never get feedback from an audience. It's, you know, you and a crew. So the only place you get to interact with the audience for voice work is at these wonderful Comic-Cons. And the amazing thing about Batman is the devotion of his audience, the devotion that the fans have for this character, the depth of loyalty and love is amazing. And I get to share that with you guys, and that's really, it's priceless. It's really wonderful.
Let's talk a little bit about the distinction of the two voices between Batman and Bruce Wayne. And okay. Did you take inspiration?
Well, that was a little bit of my actor ego. Because,
okay.
You know, actors are always looking for ways to complicate things. And I said to Bruce Timm early on, I said, wait a minute, because I was still learning about the art. I said, let me get this straight. He's the richest guy in town. He's the most famous guy in town. He's the most eligible bachelor. And he puts on a mask and no one knows it's him? I said, seriously? Could I kind of play with the voice a little bit? You know, what if we used my voice for Bruce Wayne and then I had the Batman voice for Batman? I said, that makes it a little bit more realistic. So early on, the first, I'd say, 6 episodes, Bruce really let me play with that. And the Batman voice was really, the image I was using in my head was David Niven. Now the young people here won't know who that is, but he was a wonderful British character actor who always played very sophisticated, very sarcastic, very urbane characters. He always had some smart aleck kind of remark to make. And that to me was Bruce Wayne. He was very sophisticated, very wry. There was a lot of humor in him early on. And that was a wonderful counterbalance to Batman, because it made Batman that much darker. To have Bruce Wayne a little brighter. When they got the first, you know, we do the recordings first. The voices are done first. And then those tapes are sent to the artists. And they paint the show to what we've recorded. And then there's a process called ADR, where the visual artwork is synced up with the soundtrack. And then there are always extra, like, mouth flaps the artists have put in that need to be fixed with new lines, or there'll be some rewrites done. So that's the first time you see the visual with the audio is in ADR. The first time they saw ADR was about 6 months after we'd started recording, because it takes that long to paint the shows. They realized that the lighter sound I'd been using, that sort of David Niven ironic kind of quality, was too light for such a dark show. So they actually had me go back and re-record the first few episodes, just the Batman voice, to make him closer, just the Bruce Wayne voice, to make him closer to Batman. They liked the distinction, but it was just too dramatic. So it was more my own voice. They just had me do it more my own voice. But it was interesting, because that first day of ADR, we've been recording the show for 6 months. We'd have all these shows in the can, but no one had ever seen anything yet. So I was in ADR with Mark Hamill. We're both in there together for the first time, and we're in the studio at Warner Brothers, and on the screen comes the opening of the Batman show, and these beautiful, rich colors, and this full symphony sound. And I looked at Mark, I said, did you have a clue this is what we were doing? So it was a wonderful day, and we both realized how beautiful it was going to be.
And it is, and you're right, it stands up, you know, now it looks just as gorgeous as it did when it first was released.
Does it?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take some audience questions. And while you guys are getting the first one ready, the character has taken a bit of a darker turn in the live versions. Do you approve? Is this a controversial question?
I personally love the fact that Batman does not kill. That's just me. I love the fact that he doesn't kill. That's a line he just won't cross, which is why Arkham Asylum is such a crazy place, because everyone he's arrested goes to Arkham. Unfortunately, I think in the live-action movies, they've crossed that line where he kills, and he kills a lot. And Gotham, which is beautiful artwork and wonderfully written, but there's so much death. I just don't get that in Batman.
Yeah, I agree, actually. Hi,
one of my favorite episodes of your show was Beware of the Grey Ghost.
Oh.
Just like, you know, Mr. Conroy, what was it like working with Adam West?
Adam West, boy, that was a shock recently when he passed. What can I say about Adam? Adam was, I think above everything else, a gentleman in the truest sense of the word. He was, and Ephraim Zimbalist was too. He was just a gentleman. He was a kind, intelligent, generous actor. The first day he came in, I was nervous because you're treading on someone else's territory. You know, he established his career with the live-action Batman shows. So he's coming in, and I think he's going to say, who's this young schmuck, you know, who's doing this role? He couldn't have been kinder. He said, man, I had so much fun doing that role. He said, it's yours now. Run with it and have a blast with it. You know, it's your turn. And then he gave this blowout performance as the Grey Ghost. He was just a very kind, good person to work with, as was Ephraim. I love working with both of them. But that's again Andrea. She would attract really good actors.
Thank you. Hi. Go ahead.
Hi, Kevin Conroy. I really love your voice acting. Like, you're one of my favorite Batmans. When you voice Batman, you're my favorite Batman voice.
Thank you so much.
So what's your favorite ever memory of voicing pretty much everyone's favorite hero?
That's a great question. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I have a favorite episode. And I have a favorite movie. My favorite movie of all the Batman movies, live action or animated, is Mask of the Phantasm. Such a great movie. I mean, it tells the whole Batman genesis, the origin of the story. And then there's that incredible scene at his parents' grave, and he's pleading with them to please release him from his sacred vow, because he's fallen in love and he wants to have a normal life, but he knows in his heart he can't. And then there's that flock of bats that comes up out of the Batcave, like it's his past coming back to grab him back. I just love that movie. I think it's a beautiful movie, and I love it. favorite episode of all the shows was Perchance to Dream, which is a great episode. But for largely similar reasons, because it tells the origin, it goes into his background, he's drugged, and he goes back to his childhood and his inner relations with his father. So any stories that dealt with Batman as the conflicted individual, I love those stories. Because that's what makes the audience love him so much. He's flawed. He's a guy with issues, you know, big issues. He can't fly. He can't see through walls. He can't, you know, he has no superpowers. He's just a person who's been so challenged and damaged by life, but he refuses to let it crush him. He refuses to go to the dark side. He turns it into something good, which is what I think inspires people so much about him. He's a wonderful character to play because he's so complicated, and he takes all that complication and he turns it into something good. Life is hard for everybody. Everybody's lives are hard. No one gets out of this place alive. You know, it's a complicated journey. It's how you handle it along the way that distinguishes you. And I think that's why people love this character so much, because he's so challenged by life, and he answers that challenge so in such a noble way.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
How's it going? Hey. I just want to say, hands down, probably my favorite cartoon growing up as a kid.
Thank you.
You did an amazing job. I was wondering, what do you prefer when in the booth, when I'm doing like the animated show itself, or the movies, or the video games? And any cool experience that happened in the booth?
What a question, you have no idea. When you're in the booth with other actors, like I said, you're in a playground. It is so much fun. And you, acting is as much reacting as it is acting. You're as good as what you get. So there's a lot of give and take, there's a lot of interaction, there's a lot of fun that happens with the other actors. So doing an episode of the show takes about 2 hours to record. And there's no pre-rehearsal. You go in and it's a cold reading with the other actors. You each do your homework, but you record the day you get there. So you don't know what the other people are going to necessarily do until you hear it. That's going to affect your performance. So it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of discovery. There's a lot of interaction. Doing a game? Game recordings have to be completely clean because of the way the games are played and the way they're built in a computer. Depending on how you play the game, different, you know, it's going to go different ways, different directions, different lines will come up, different avenues for the character. So each soundtrack has to be completely separate. So you're recorded alone. You're alone in a booth. And you're alone in a booth for 4 hours at a time. Then you're given an hour for lunch, and then it's another 4 hours. So it's an 8-hour day, alone, saying line after line after line after line after line. It's like, you know, get out of the bat cave. Great, Kevin, love it. Can we do it with a little irony? Get out of the bat cave. Okay, keep the irony. Can we have a smile? Get out of the bat cave. I'm not kidding. For 8 hours! You know, I'll get you, Joker! Little louder. I'll get you, Joker! Okay, little softer. I'll get you, Joker. We have another take. I'll get you, Joker. And then you're trying to keep the Batman character alive. You're trying to stay in the voice, to keep the voice going. And then all these different types of reads, alone, with no one feeding you, for 8 hours. You do that for 5 days, for a week. They usually do like a week at a time. Then the writers go off and do some more finagling this stuff. Then you come back and do another week, 40 hours of this. So it's by the end of the week, you forget how to speak English. You not only don't know the Batman voice anymore, you don't know how to speak English. You just come out of there and you're kind of grunting and making noise. So it's you have to entirely feed yourself. It's all self-motivated. It's all self-created. And then, in the midst of it all, they're saying, okay, now you're falling off a cliff. Ah! Shorter version. Ah! It's a 1,000-foot cliff. Ah! It's a 500-foot cliff. Ah! You know, it's like, you're trying to keep the reality of the drama going, with the character voice going, with the different versions of it going, alone! So, and then, let me tell you a secret. Arkham Knight, the last game, had 37,000 lines recorded. And I had 36,000 lines. No, I don't know that's true, but that's what I felt like. 37,000 lines! That's like War and Peace! Because depending on how the game's played, you know, all those different avenues, all those different rabbit holes that people can play down, that all has to be recorded. So, and each one is, you know, can you do a little louder? Can you do a little softer? Can you do a little more irony? Okay, keep the irony now, a little bit of a knife. You know, oh, you're losing the Batman voice. You know, it's no fun. You know? It's like, you know, they can't teach you that at Juilliard. There are no courses on how to record games in acting school. It's just something you sort of wing. It's one of those curveballs that come your way, and you just kind of wing it. So, that's a very loaded question. The difference between recording shows and recording games. It's like, it's a whole different world. And it's a real challenge to be an actor, keeping a character alive, in that crazy, crazy situation. You know what I mean?
That's a great question. Thank you for that. And you look great, by the way.
Good
question. Hi. Hi. So, first of all, a couple years ago, I was here when you were here, and I was cosplaying Two-Face, and you complimented me, and I'm still geeking out about that.
Cool.
But my question is, I believe you're the fifth episode of the Justice League series, This Little Piggy, where Wonder Woman's not being paid. And Batman sings, Am I Blue?
Am I Blue?
Yeah. Yeah, and
there was a time. But now I'm sad and lonely. I'm a
So my question was, when you first found out that that was going to be kind of the thing that was happening in that episode, were you excited? And how did you balance doing, you know, with your beautiful singing voice at the same time, I'm Batman trying to save my companion from being butchered as a pig? Like, how did you balance that out?
I think it's fair to say he was excited.
Well, okay, first of all, the reason that was in the show was because Andrea knows that I love to sing. I like to sing. So she said, we gotta use his voice, So then when they told me they were gonna have it sing, Bruce Timm's the one who said, well, how can we have Batman sing? That doesn't make any sense. He's like the last guy in the world who would sing. So then obviously I'm singing as Batman. So they chose Am I Blue because it's a very Batman song. And they had me just do the first parts of it, which are in the lower register, because it would be easier to do Batman. Like, you couldn't do, there was a time I was the only one. You know, the song goes really high, and it's very lyrical. Well, that would be crazy for Batman to sing that. It just wouldn't make sense. So they had me to do the beginning part. Am I Blue? That made sense. So, does that answer your question?
That was awesome, by the way.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear
Katie.
Happy birthday to you. Superman and Wonder Woman, and Orestes and Agamemnon was to teach morality to their children. Those were morality. And the theater of the Middle Ages, those were all morality plays that the churches put on to teach people. Shakespeare's plays, they were all morality plays about the kings. They were stories of good and evil. King Lear is the story of good versus evil, Edgar versus Edmund. These are all stories teaching people about the drama of life and what it is to be a good person. That's what the Greeks were teaching. Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman, that's just our culture's answer to that. Those are our mythological heroes. The Greeks had gods who could fly. The Greeks had gods who could see through things, who could turn into things. We have superheroes who can. So, theater is theater. Theater animation and television and film, it's all about getting into the soul of the character. That's what I meant when I said memorizing the heartbeats. It's getting into the what's behind the lines, what's underneath the lines. Mark Hamill becomes the Joker. If you could see him in the booth, he's not putting on a funny voice. See him, Daddy! And when you see him do it, his whole face, his whole body is like, it's wonderful to watch. And that's what acting's about. And no one can teach you that. It's life teaches you that. How to get into somebody's heart. And the thing they teach you in acting school is how to strip away who Kevin Conroy is, who Mary Jane is, who Joe Schmo is, you know, who you are that life has put on you, so that you can get into somebody else. And it took me a long time to figure that out.
That's a great question, and that's amazing advice.